It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome in to episode 334 of this Source to Say podcast, your go-to Kentucky basketball and recruiting podcast on the growing KSR Podcast Network. I am your host, Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio. Very excited to be joined once again by the one and only Sean Smith. Sean, how the heck are you?
I am fantastic. Jack Pilgrim texted you this morning. I was like, hey, when are we gonna record Source to Say? And we got quite a bit of news since the last time we recorded. Kentucky has a backcourt. Kentucky has shooting. Kentucky has veteran guards on its roster. It was a piece that was missing, and he added it all in one day.
Let's start with the news that we kind of thought could break while we were on last week's show with Kobe Brea, the nation's leading three-point shooter out of Dayton. Sean, this was a guy that Kentucky had to beat the best of the best for. UConn, Kansas, UNC, Duke, Kentucky were his final five. And Kentucky is able to go out no matter what the national analysts and you know, the UConn angle and wherever the news was coming from with Kobe Brea, it almost came down to it's by process of elimination, Kentucky is the only option left for him. I don't think that was totally fair. This was a hard-fought battle for him to get to those finals, that final group, then kind of the final three that it came down to. But for Mark Pope to go land a coin flip three-point shooter who does it better than anybody else in college basketball, the volume that he does it, Sean, I think it's the perfect fit for Mark Pope, and I am thrilled that he's excited about it.
Is that music on your end or mine?
It's part of the...
Okay, because that was freaking me out. I was over closing every tab I can find.
I hear that song in my sleep because whoever has this YouTube page does that song for... He cuts these highlights for every single transfer portal target, and he has it up 5 minutes after these kids enter the transfer portal. It blows my mind. He must have just every kid in America have highlights cut for him with all of their synergy stats, what they do on catch and shoot, corner threes, what they do in transition, points per possession, all of the advanced numbers. He has them ready to go the second they announce they're entering the transfer portal. So thank God for this guy, because he has made my life so much easier over the last several weeks. But Kobe Brea is about as good as it gets for what he brings to the table.
Sure. Yeah, if you could have seen me on camera, my mind was going 100 miles an hour just then. I was looking all over the place trying to get that stuff playing. But no, like Kentucky, I mean, that's the piece, right? Like that's the one that we were talking about last week that we were watching, and they got him, and the efficiency that they get with him, Jack. Like they get a guy that took a high number of threes and made a high number of threes, didn't take a lot of twos. He kind of was a specialist there from three-point range, and I think there's more to his game, though. Like, I think that he'll be able to showcase some things at Kentucky that maybe he didn't get to show at Dayton. But the one thing that you're seeing there on the screen is the way that he made shots from different spots on the floor and how much range he has. But the effective field goal percentage number, like, that you get is ridiculous. Like, that's a guy that the way effective field goal percentage and stuff works, it weighs through made threes more than made twos, obviously, because they count for more points. And when you take and make more threes than you attempt in twos, your effective field goal percentage is going to be higher, but his is significantly higher than a majority of what you see around, not just college basketball, but the game of basketball. So you add an efficient, not just shooter, but an efficient shot maker from deep. And it allows all those other pieces on this roster to kind of settle in. And now you can kind of see what the blueprint could look like offensively when you got a floor spacer like that.
Like 83% effective field goal percentage on catch and shoot threes, 100th percentile in college basketball. Like what he does at his best, nobody in college basketball touches. And I love the quote that Mark Pope gave after his signing. By the numbers, Kobe Brea is the most efficient mid to high major player in college basketball in the last decade. Like, that is such a baller quote to have about, like, to have that by your name to be associated. Like, hey, what does Kobe Brea do? Well, he's the most efficient player in the last decade in college basketball, like at any level. I think that's just the coolest thing. He's the best returning shooter in college basketball next year. Kobe is a dangerous, dangerous man who is a great human and with an incredible family. He will be key in allowing us to play the style of basketball that we love the most. Kobe and this group are going to take Big Blue Nation on an incredible ride. Like I said before, it was my understanding during the recruiting process with Kobe Brea that he initially wasn't totally in love with Kentucky because the early signs didn't show a cohesive plan of what a national title contender looked like. He didn't want to be, you know, he was one of the guys that I talked about a couple episodes back of, he didn't want to take a chance on his last season of eligibility. He knew that he wanted to go to a winning situation. He wanted to go compete, go on a run in March. And he just didn't know if Kentucky could get there and didn't want to be one of the first people to sign up in case the pieces wouldn't end up coming together. So he was in very much wait and see mode with Kentucky initially, kind of zeroed in on UConn, Duke, UNC. Kansas was never really a true top option, but it was one of those schools where he was really in love with. But the way the roster came together and the pieces kind of fell into place leading up to Brea's commitment, it kind of allowed Mark Pope to regroup, go back with another follow-up pitch with Brea and said, okay, well, what about this? We kind of have the front court set. We have the wings. We have a pretty dang solid core. Why don't you come and be our three-point specialist? Where there is a clear role for you that we desperately need and nobody else in college basketball can do it at the level that you do, there's a pairing here. There's a match. Let's just make this happen. So it says a lot that Kentucky was able to slide back in. And there was some talk behind the scenes that he may have, you know, overplayed his hand a little bit in the NIL realm of, you know, maybe had a pretty significant asking price initially. Some schools kind of pulled out because they couldn't afford him. And it was kind of just a nice situation to unfold for Kentucky where they may have even gotten him at a discount because some of the other schools that were all in on him, again, five finalists, the biggest blue bloods in college basketball. Some of them had to pull out for NIL reasons. You put yourself in a position to where you get the best three-point shooter in college basketball, maybe at a very, very slight discount, but he's not a discount player. He's a guy that everybody in college basketball wanted for a reason. I like that Mark Pope specified by saying he will be key in allowing us to play the style of basketball that we love the most. He is a Mark Pope basketball player through and through, Sean.
Absolutely is. And when you turn on the tape and you look at it, you see that Kentucky is going to be able to do some things that Mark Pope wants to do and that he did at BYU. Like, he fits the makeup of what he's looking for in a wing. But when you looked at how this roster was pieced together, we talked about it the last few weeks. Like, they clearly went out and got a defensive presence and kind of found an identity there in the portal with adding defensive-minded pieces to the roster. Some physicality there. We kept talking about, well, you just got to check off boxes. Check this box here. And you didn't have to check them here and then come check this side and then check that side. They started kind of just all grouping it. And then we start looking, okay, well, where's the shooting going to come from? And then we've asked the question, okay, who's the dude going to be? And things like that. And I kept talking last week about the system's going to be what produces the dudes, not just the dude. It's going to be the system itself is going to be the strong point. But when you get Brea, and you get a guy who understands what his value is and what he brings to the game, doesn't turn the ball over, values possessions, makes shots, we're not talking about a guy that shoots 13, 14 threes a game. Like, his efficiency is in about six attempts. So could that climb? Maybe in Mark Pope's system, if you're shooting the ball that efficiently from three, probably don't mind you taking 10 a game. But overall, just what he adds, spacing the floor, not just from 21, 22 feet, but we're talking 24, 25 feet, the ability to knock down deep threes. You know, Jack, that quote that Pope talked about, extending out and making you guard even further, defensively, he is that guy that fits that, which then allows these bigs and these guys that can touch the paint to have more room to operate and do what they do offensively, that makes all these little Lamont Butlers and everybody even better basketball players at Kentucky. Like, when you put it all together and you look at it, now you can start to kind of envision what Kentucky can do now that they have shooting added to this backcourt.
That was followed almost immediately, like 2 hours later, Kentucky then goes out and adds West Virginia's Kerr Carissa, who that was a polarizing ad. Like, that was one that college basketball diehards love him or despise him. Like, there is no in between with Kerr Carissa. He's kind of become the villain of college basketball. He's like a walking meme where he talks endless trash. He takes crazy shots. He will get into it with other players. He'll argue with the refs. He is a character, but also really darn talented. He has his flaws. He has his downside. Turns the ball over way too much, a defensive liability at times. But at his core, he is a shot maker and a playmaker among the best in college basketball. You get the quote from Mark Pope: Kerr Carissa is one of the best shooters in the country. I feel like I've been recruiting him for the last 5 or 6 years since he was a prep player. He is one of the most experienced guards in all of college basketball. Kerr played on some great Arizona teams, and then last year in the hallowed halls of West Virginia. He has a competitive spirit that overflows in every way conceivable. Kerr will have a massive impact on our team on the court and in the locker room. Kentucky fans are going to love his bold personality. Bold is the perfect way to describe him. There are downsides, but for a system fit, he fits to a T, exactly what Pope is looking for from a facilitating perspective. There wasn't a true lead facilitator signed up to this point. You needed a guy that could kind of lead the charge in that realm. So to add him, understanding that, okay, we're going to have to minimize some of the downfalls of his game, but there's a lot of stuff in there to maximize in this system. He's a huge, wildly impactful scheme fit, I think, Sean, that those two guys kind of go hand in hand. There's going to be a lot of back and forth chemistry between Kerr Carissa and Kobe Brea.
Yeah, there is. And it goes back to what I said last week. It's another guy that this staff and that Mark Pope, well, not the whole staff, but Mark Pope himself, evaluated and game planned for and scouted against. Like, that's another thing, like another Big 12 piece that he saw with his own two eyes. And I just don't think that that's coincidental, Jack. I think that is a thing that going into year one, Mark Pope is like, I want to know what I have. I want to know where I'm going and who these pieces are, especially with building my first roster at Kentucky. So he's going out and getting guys that he's familiar with their game and what they can do with their strengths and their weaknesses. And I think that he looks at these pieces and maybe sees their weaknesses and is like, okay, I can help correct these weaknesses because I know how valuable they are in the areas that they're good at. And when it comes to Carissa, we're talking about a guy that has a ton of starts under his belt. So 99 career games played, 93 career starts. And it's not at low major programs. It's at Arizona and it's at West Virginia.
A one-seed Arizona team.
A one-seed Arizona
team. A Pac-12 championship one-seed Arizona team.
Shoots it well from the free throw line. The three-point percentage this season at West Virginia, I know in only 23 games, Jack, was 42.4%, which was the best of his career. Took a high number of threes. 238 as a sophomore, 227 as a junior, and then 144, obviously, this last season at West Virginia. But that season was definitely his most efficient from there. So another guy that can make shots. You mentioned the turnovers, but the assist numbers are up. So kind of, he can facilitate a lot of stuff in middle ball screen. I think he's going to be able to see and hit these bigs rolling to the basket and kind of see the floor with some vision there. But the ability to knock down shots, he plays with an edge that I think that this team is going to need. And just another veteran guy that has played a ton of college basketball. I mean, we're talking about a program here, Jack, that we've been talking for years about how young they were and that they weren't maybe ready to win some of those games in the Champions Classic in November and maybe early December. That is not the case anymore. Like, this is a roster that's going to be significantly older, but not just older. It's older and experienced. It's got a lot of starts and a lot of college basketball under its belt and a lot of successful programs.
And that's a kid that got a lot of flack last season by West Virginia fans. West Virginia fans will admit they kind of hated his guts. Like, he was, it was a losing situation for him, and he is kind of the guy that when things weren't going well, some of the, you know, he matured a little bit, but some of the, like, I have winning in my DNA, and I know this team stinks. So a lot of those bad shot selection, turnover prone, bad decision making, the, you know, competitive flair doesn't work with your fan base when you're fired up and, you know, losing basketball games. Like, it works in your favor when the team's winning, like he was a fan favorite out in Arizona, but when you're in a losing situation, some of those same passionate traits comes across as bad teammate, those sorts of, you know, stereotypes. So it's kind of one of those, that's why it's a polarizing thing, where if things go as planned for Mark Pope, and you can kind of recreate some of that magic out in Arizona that he was as their lead guard, he can be a really, really strong piece on a very good team. If the wheels come off a little bit and things spiral south, that's where you could get into trouble. But I like that a coach doesn't envision that scenario unfolding for himself. He sees this as a winning situation, so he wants to go get a guy that is the most passionate in college basketball at winning basketball games. So it's a risk. There are some downsides. There's a reason why it wasn't just a unanimous positive, you know, reaction to his addition. But again, I don't see him stepping in and being the guy who's going to play 35 minutes and take 20 shots a game. That's not who he is. And if that is him, then it is a losing position for Kentucky, and then you will get some of those downsides of him. If he is a role fit and a scheme fit type of guy, I in my opinion, I think Mark Pope has added roster spots and rotation guys 3 through 11. I think he has the core down pat. I think that he added, ever, like you said to start the show, he added rebounding, he added defense, he added shooting, he added facilitating, he added leadership, he added experience. He kind of fit all of those roles 3 to 11. Now he goes, needs to go and add 1 and 2 and 12 and 13 at the end of the bench. It's a really scary position to be in, because you are relying on some guys to pull their name out of the draft. And, you know, if not a Wugo Poplar, a Jackson Robinson, Chaz Laney, or you're one of those types of talents, you're leaning on them to not only commit to your school, but also pull their name out of the draft. It's a two-part thing. So it's a tricky situation, but it's a really strong base that Mark Pope has found himself in, where I don't think there's a need for anything beyond a stretch four. That's another fit, and Mark Pope kind of addressed that, said he's going to add one more big, a guy that's capable of going out, you know, stretching and knocking down shots. And then he's just going to push all of his chips in on a star. Pick one. Pick your poison, whoever that is. That's a really scary situation, but it's also a healthy position if you can go land a Jackson Robinson. And I think Kentucky's in great shape to do that.
Absolutely. And it just the versatility that they have with the kind of the flexibility that he has to look at some different things across the roster now. Like, you can do – you've got guys that are known as defenders. You've got guys that can touch the paint off the bounce. You've got some physical guys in your backcourt. You've got shooters. You have a combination of bigs that can do some similar things, but also some of them have more upside than the other. Like, you've got your upside pieces that could really break through and become a star. And if that happens, then great. If it happens a year or two from now, you've added all that to your program, Jack. And I just kind of like how this has all come together in a matter of about 3 weeks. Because this wasn't an easy transition. This wasn't easy to do. And putting a staff together and then putting your entire roster together all at the same time, that's a significant challenge for a man that probably maybe just now might be catching up on sleep over the last 2 to 3 weeks. But
maybe, barely.
Maybe. And well, he wasn't today because he was going around all over the place. I ran into him in the hallway at school. So, like, I can kind of tell you, you know, firsthand that he's still active and doing all this stuff, and, you know, the Derby and everything else. So he's
poor guy, dude.
He's going to crash here in the next 2 weeks as we get closer to mid to late May. And
he deserves a vacation in that June period, or that first week of June, where the roster should be set by then. And Peach Jam. Yeah. Shut up. Don't say it. I'll say it this time. Not you. Peach Jam's not till July. There's that recruiting gap. He's going to deserve a vacation where he disconnects. You can't reach him. He will disappear and everything else will be run by the other support staff still back in Lexington. He is going to deserve that because I was told that this dude wakes up at the butt crack of dawn and doesn't go to bed until the very, very, very end of the day. Early riser, late faller. I don't know how he does it. He is all gas, no brakes, and it's working. I mean, he's filling out a roster better than anybody I think could have imagined walking into this, knowing the hurdles that were going to come with, okay, we're going to lose the entire recruiting class. You're going to lose the entire roster starting from scratch, ground up. For him to do what he has been able to do in such a short amount of time, I mean, we have more players on our roster today than we did last June. I mean, that's insane to think about, but it's true. We're farther along today than we were at this point under John Calipari with an actual foundation set back last June.
And lost an entire recruiting class outside of Travis Perry. Like, that's the other thing about this too, is there wasn't a recruiting class to fall back on to go, okay, I'm bringing this with me. Like, I mean, obviously, you know, you get Colin Chandler, but there wasn't those four or five or six pieces that last summer, those were the only names that you knew you had. And possibly a couple more here and there in the transfer portal and things that decided to come back. But it's different. But what I was getting at a moment ago was just the different pieces that he has. Like, he's got plenty of shooting now. He's got plenty of guys that can do it off the bounce. Can those guys that are known as drivers and paint touchers, can they be even more efficient with guys like Brea and Creasa and stuff on the roster that can stretch the floor? Does a role for Kirk Creasa change by playing at Kentucky with a different combination of players and talent? Is it less with the ball in his hands, and maybe is it making shots and taking open threes? I don't know. So those things we can't really answer right now because we can only kind of look at what they have been in the past. But I'm assuming that some of these guys, Jack, the roles and what they are and what their identity has been will still be a key part of what they are at Kentucky. But some of them, I think, are going to be asked to do a little bit more because there's more to their game. But I think some may be asked to do a little less and become more efficient players, like an Otega Owe. Like, is he going to take the same number of shots at Kentucky that he did at Oklahoma? I don't think so, which is going to in turn make him a more efficient player because I think he's going to understand and value those possessions and get better looks and get better opportunities. Does a Lamont Butler end up shooting a higher field goal percentage from the floor at Kentucky than he ever did at previous places? So those are things that I'm looking for that are maybe questions that we can't answer now, but that's where Mark Pope's system comes into play. And if you play in this system, it can produce efficient offensive players. And that's why I think everybody on this roster is going to have an uptick in what their numbers look like, just being in that space and being in that system where you have high IQ basketball players making read and react decisions.
And I want to combat, there's a comment that from P-Nut B-T Posse. I don't know what that sounds out to, but it said, what happened to five out? We only have one legit three-point threat. Second part of that, just not accurate. Kirk Creasa is a shooter. Kobe Brea is a shooter. Travis Perry is a shooter. Colin Chandler is a shooter. Andrew Carr is a shooter. You could probably pencil in Carr, Creasa, and Kobe Brea as, you know, high-level rotation impact guys. We'll see what happens with the other two. We'll see how Colin Chandler comes back from his mission, which he came back a couple days ago. I think that's pretty awesome that he's back and ramping up the workouts. I know there's a lot of excitement about him around the program, and we'll see what happens with Travis Perry. There is an opportunity for him to have a role as well. But those guys, there are elite shooters on this roster. And the one thing that you touched on that we need to continue to stress and double down, Mark Pope added guys with high level efficiency in catch and shoot guys. Yep. Lamont Butler graded out, maybe not overall as just a pure creator, shot creator for himself from deep, but as a catch and shoot specialist, he was sensational. Otega Owe, exact same guy. You talk to the people around him, they say, well, he's not a great guy at creating his own three-point looks, but in a catch and shoot where he's in stride, in rhythm, kind of what you referred to with like DJ Wagner last season, an in-rhythm shooter, he's tremendous. He's
and that's where analytics come into play.
Yeah.
That's where analytics play into this. When you use analytics and you use advanced analytics and numbers and film, like the numbers you're talking about, Jack, then you can get guys shots and get guys looks, and then you put them in situations to where they're most successful. And then if you understand, okay, I am a better three-point shooter when I am feet are set and I'm off the ball than I am coming off the bounce. Guess what? We take more standstill with our feet set threes than what we do off the bounce. Or you work on that area of your game even more to add to it and add more value to what I can do in those weak areas. So that's where analytics come into play, and that's where I love the fact that Pope is all in on that. Because at this point in the game, there is way too much out there that you can use to your advantage. And if you've got the right guys in place that that's their role on a staff, then it makes these players significantly better basketball players, and it puts them in positions to succeed. What I like most about this roster, though, is not the offense. It's not the shooting. It's not the passing ability. It's the fact that he's added defense. You're going to hear me this summer talk more defense than I am offense, because I'm not worried about what Kentucky's going to do offensively. Mark Pope is going to have one of the more efficient offenses in college basketball. I trust his system. I've seen it with my own two eyes. When you turn on the tape, he's going to put guys in positions to have success on that end of the floor. He immediately addressed the two areas that Kentucky needs to be good immediately: physicality and defense. It has been addressed, and they have it all across this roster, Jack. This is going to be a team that's going to defend better than I think that we've seen the last few years at Kentucky, which in return is going to put them in the upper half of the league right away with a chance to have success and be a solid tournament team. Does that mean a national championship in year one? No. Does that mean a Final Four in year one? No. But I think that they're going to have a toughness about them that's been missing. You add that to an efficient offense, then I think that you could settle in on a KenPom team that you feel good about winning some tournament games a year from now.
I think Ali Khalifa and the way he was used at BYU is the perfect example of why we should not be concerned about an Andrew Carr, about Amari Williams, about a Brandon Garrison even, because those are all high-level passers. Mark Pope won't shut up about how elite they are, and he sought them out specifically for their passing abilities beyond, the defense or shooting or whatever. If you watch the way Ali Khalifa was used this past season at BYU as a just pure court vision facilitator, but while knowing that he was an absolute liability defensively, an absolute liability as a shooter, could make the occasional catch and shoot shot, which is kind of what we're talking about with some of these other guys, where no, on paper, he is not a shooter, but he makes shots when they're, because the system creates them for him. So look at that. That is the worst case scenario. And Mark Pope made him look like one of the best transfer portal guy, transfer options in the portal. Now go get high level talent, McDonald's All American level talent in a Brandon Garrison or whatever. And you're going to get a similar vibe, but kind of what we talked about. Don't recruit BYU players here. Bring in Kentucky level talent that can run the same system. I think that's when you think of what Ali Khalifa did out of the Zoom and some of the different actions that were run through him as a facilitator. Think about that when Mark Pope talks about how much he values passing out of the bigs and how everything else will run around them, and the open looks that are going to be created for Kirk Risa, that are going to be created for Andrew Carr, that's going to be created for, Kobe Brea, of course, of all people. It's a really, really good position to be in, that you just have to kind of trust the system and know that the scheme fit is there.
And this is a staff and a head coach that when you go back and watch the last couple of years at BYU, they really excelled in understanding how to adjust on the flying games and take advantage of what other teams are doing defensively against you. Like, they'll run things and they get a switch out of it. And it's a guard on a big, or it's a big posting on a guard, or it's a bigger size guard with some size that can post on a mismatch. Like, they'll do those things and they'll recognize it. And guess what? They'll continue to go to it. You think you're taking away this, and yeah, you maybe are taking away a certain part of what they want to do offensively, but they'll make you pay by making adjustments. There are going to be adjustments made offensively and defensively that just were not being made the last few years. And like I said last week, that's not a dig at the previous staff. It's just a completely different way of coaching. And Mark Pope will make those adjustments on the fly. And there's no stubbornness to it. There's no wanting to do it one specific way. It's like, okay, you're taking this away. Well, we'll make you pay. We'll sit a guard right here and post you. Or we'll duck in. We'll do some different things like that. So seeing that on tape is what gives me a lot of confidence that Mark Pope is going to take all these pieces that have been in roles at previous stops. Some of them are going to take on more. Some of them are going to take on less. But when you look at the overall product of this, I think you're going to have an efficient roster with guys that are probably going to have some more of the more efficient years of their career on the offensive end of the floor, that whatever they decide to run, whatever their pillar of this ends up being offensively, is it a lot of zoom? Is it a lot of ball screen? Is it a lot of dribble handoffs? Like what is it that we're going to see out of this team offensively? It's transition threes. We've known that. It's going to be advancing the ball in transition and getting early looks from three. All those things are going to factor into this, Jack. But I think the one question that you have to maybe have about it is it is a lot of new faces that are going to be doing some similar things, but some different things. We can hope these guys are acceptable to those roles, but until you get into these practices and see it, there's going to be a little bit of adjustment for some pieces and some people. But the experience of playing as much college basketball as they've had, it's actually a good thing. It's not a negative thing. That they've played a lot, they've done a lot. Some of these guys have been at multiple transfers, multiple spots. Those things play into it and help too. Like they have the ability, players today have the ability to adapt and change on the fly with the transfer portal era. There's so much change going on. I would expect this to be a veteran-led team for sure. That's going to make that transition even easier. But the most important thing that I'm going to keep coming back to, he hasn't coached these guys, but he has coached against these guys. He knows them just as well.
Kirk Creasa added to the list.
He knows those guys as well as some people that have coached them. When you scout and you prepare and you play people in your conference, you know those guys almost as well as you do the pieces on your roster because you were preparing for them maybe a couple of games a season, but you're watching them and getting things ready and you understood them. You understand them on a level that's pretty deep from a personnel standpoint. That is why I think he's taking these pieces, because I think he saw things in their game that he can make even better, but he also saw the things that absolutely just blew them away. I mean, these are guys that scored 20 plus on him. You go look across the board. Creasa scored 20 plus and hit 5 threes against BYU. Like, these weren't guys that laid, you know, just eggs against them like a big goose egg in every category. These are guys that literally went out there and played some of the best games of the season against Mark Pope. And he's thinking, okay, 1 year, maybe 2 years with these guys, I want those pieces to build my program and jumpstart it. And then we go after what we're going to do recruiting-wise in high school and the transfer portal. Because whatever it looks like this year, Jack, I think it's going to look different in year two and then maybe be established by year three. But right now, this is the immediate path to winning with what he was handed. And he was handed nothing. So this is his path to winning. And I think it's the right approach.
I love the Brandon Garrison example with that, because Brandon was a guy that was seen as the high potential, high, you know, project bid coming out. I don't think that was a totally fair, you know, a characterization of him, but he trusted his gut knowing that he torched BYU at Oklahoma State. He torched Alvin Brooks III at Baylor and against Baylor. And knew that he had great off-support on campus. It was going to be a battle down the stretch. It was going to be at least 10 more days, if not more, before he was going to finalize the decision. He was going to go through all of his visits. He was going to be really, really expensive. And Pope had an opportunity where Brandon Garrison calls and says, hey, my gut's telling me Kentucky, I think I want to be here. And Pope says, you know what? Let's just do it. Let's just call it off right now. Let's get you signed, sealed, and delivered. Thanks, but no thanks. Great off-sport. If you want to come in 10 days and, you know, add to the fun, by all means, but just know that it's going to come at our cost now. It's not going to be the NIL lucrative deal that you were hoping for, and you're sure as heck not going to get the minutes and roll and all that, and it just was very clearly not going to be a fit when the other schools were offering similar things. That was a gut call because there was in-game real time evaluation by Mark Pope. He saw him with his own two eyes playing the Big 12 and said, look, I know Great Osborne's putting up God numbers out at Utah State. I know on paper he is as good as it gets. But I have seen with my own two eyes Brandon Garrison torch my ass. I want to be able to do that to other teams. I can work with that. I know that the foundation for him as a basketball player, I know that it was a little bit of a longer runway with him, that he has 3 years left of eligibility. I can kind of mold this guy like a piece of clay and get him to where I want him to be consistent night in and night out as a McDonald's All-American level talent at a high school. I can work with that. Let's just trust my gut. It was a gut call. It could end up being wrong. Great Osborne could be an All-American at Louisville. There is a real chance that Great Osborne becomes an All-American at Louisville or Texas Tech or Washington, wherever he lands. And we're going to have to eat that. Like, we're just going to have to accept that he was in hand, wanted to play with Amari Williams. Very real chance he was going to be a Wildcat. And we passed on that because there was bird in the hand with Brandon Garrison, and it was an opportunity that Mark Pope didn't want to pass up. That takes guts. But I also trust his eye. I trust his evaluation, and we'll see how it kind of comes to fruition for this point forward. It's a risk, but it's one that I'm willing to take after the fact. But now you are still in need of a top-level star. There's a clear role that's available for a Jackson Robinson, for a Chaz Lanier, for a Wuga Poplar, whatever. What are your thoughts on that, Sean? What is the level of necessity with a guy like Jackson Robinson and adding him to the roster to turn this team from maybe an NCAA tournament team to a contender in the NCAA tournament?
And that's another thing too with this is I would prefer it to be him because of the familiarity and a guy that understood and played his role very well for Mark Pope and has that experience, has achieved, you know, high honors at BYU and in the Big 12 like that. That's the piece that I would want, because I think that would be a guy that you could consider to go be Kentucky's dude, that could go get you some things. And then you got your system pieces and things that are going to, your guys that are going to thrive in that. But then when it comes down to it, possession by possession game, you got a guy that you can lean on that you've coached for a while that can go get it. Cause early on, that's going to be the thing, is like, there are going to be people on this roster, Jack, that earn trust at a rate quicker than some. That's the one thing that's going to be transition here, is you've seen them, you've coached against them, you've evaluated them. Now you got to trust them. And that's not always going to be at the same speed for everybody. 1 through 11 or 1 through 12, you're going to have these guys that emerge that you trust more. And I think that would be an instant guy on this roster that he would have trust in. I think that's a pretty solid point to kind of start the season on. But just overall, like what this roster looks like, and I don't know where they're going to settle when it's all said and done, and preseason stuff's going to have them all over the place. You're going to have people that's going to have them maybe not even the top 25. You're going to have some that's going to have them 15 to 20 to 25. Like, I don't really know where the accurate place would be, but from a veteran standpoint and the veterans that they have, they've got a lot of guys that have played a lot of basketball that know how to win, that know how to be successful, that can do it in different ways, that I think just the flexibility that they have here, offensively, defensively, rebounding, physicality, like they check off so many boxes to me. Big game moments, Lamont Butler hitting a game-winning shot in the Final Four. You've got guys that have given you plenty of examples that they can have success. Now it's about, can they have it together? But when you look at it, and if Steven puts the graphic back up here of the roster and the pieces, and I mean the one that we've been seeing, it's actually really helpful when you got 9 or 10 new faces that you can kind of go through and check all of them off. But you can't just take all one-year guys. You've got to have some upside pieces that if it hits, Jack, they could turn into – NBA pieces, like, you know, Brandon Garrison, like that's a guy with a ton of upside that is still young, that has a lot more to his game, but still showcased a lot in a role that he had this season. So you get your one-year pieces, you get your Kobe Bryant, your specialist that we know what they can do. You get your Otega Oways that have a couple years of eligibility left. So it's a good blend of what you have, but I think you still had to take some upside pieces. Colin Chandler, another guy with the with a ton of upside that can develop in this program. Brandon Garrison's another one as well. Like, you have to have that balance when it comes to the roster construction. And that's where I think that fans are going to like this move as a, of a head coach even more as it goes on, is I fully believe that Mark Pope can touch all areas of roster construction. He can recruit elite high school talent. I think that's going to happen at a place like Kentucky. He's going to be able to recruit the transfer portal. But being able to retain guys in this program for a number of years and grow in this program, maybe a Colin Chandler, Travis Perry, some pieces like that possibly, that if they come in and they outperform Reed Shepherd expectations, like, not saying they're going to be Reed Shepherd, but that trajectory of come in here, you think you got them for a few years, and then boom, they're just so good, they're out the door after one. That's still going to happen. But I think that the way that this roster comes together, I think Mark Pope's going to be able to kind of have different areas of how he pieces them together over the course of the first few years he's at Kentucky. And that's something we weren't going to get with the previous staff. That identity had already been established. That culture was already in place. This culture can kind of have all of it into one. And I think that that builds pretty solid rosters in today's college basketball.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So do you need one? Do you need, like, what are the next steps for Pope? What do you think that he needs to do to round this thing out? He's already kind of laid out his own vision. His conversation with Tom Leach on the Leach Report Friday morning, he said that they have three elite bigs in his mind that he, you know, trusts to be the foundation, core guys. But he said he's going to go add, if, you know, God willing, that his goal is to go add one more stretch big, another 3-point shooter at the, you know, he kind of said a 4-3-5, just a versatile 3-point shooting forward. That's one. And then he said, some of these other decisions, we're just going to have to wait out the draft process and see. So clearly top end star talent, he thinks that you're looking for some of those decisions with a Jackson Robinson, with a Chaz Lanier, Wugo Poplar, those all fit that mold. But what do you think is necessary? What do you think he has to do to make this a Final Four team? Is it one? Is it two? A couple? You know, how do you think these last four scholarships should be used?
I certainly think that you use as many of them as you can, because I don't think you ever just assume you got enough. Like, well, how many guys right now currently on the roster? Is it nine?
Four scholarships left.
I'd like to see this thing get to 12. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to stretch it to 13 if you don't want to. Like, if you want to leave one there, and maybe there's something mid-year. I don't know. Like, I don't know what you look at there, but to me, it's getting to 11, but I'd feel much better if it gets to 12. 12 scholarship guys on this roster. I think, as you said there a moment ago, a guy like a stretch four, but maybe would feel even better if that's a guy that has the flexibility to play some three and some four, that can shoot it, but also with the ability to defend and has some size to him as well, like a longer wing piece that can also has some size enough to slide to the floor, but the versatility to play both. If you can find that, I still want Jackson Robinson. That's still the piece.
Jackson could, in a pinch, fit that void as well.
Exactly. And if that's the guy that you get there, but I still, if we get three more booms, and it doesn't, to me, it's not as much about, if you get what I just named and we can get what I just said, I mean, I don't think you can ever have enough shooting on the roster. So if you go get another guy that can confidently knock down shots from perimeter and can kind of do a couple of things, then I'm good with that. Do you go find another guy and use one of those scholarships on a guy long-term development that you can bring into your program that you have that has high upside and has potential? Can you find that somewhere? I'm okay with that too. But to me, it's about numbers this first year. Get it to 11 or get it to 12 for sure. And I really like what you got, because you have options then. You have competitive practices. that's where I'm looking at how active they get in filling out this roster and using these scholarships. Like I'm taking as much as I can with this first year, but you're right. He could fit those roles that I just talked about. And I think that's probably priority one for Mark Pope right now, because add something else to that interior. Don't just go in with what you got. I mean, I like what they've got in those pieces, but add a little bit more there as well and give yourself more options.
I think Jackson Robinson, no matter what, is a must. I think that he fits so many different – he wears so many different hats from a versatility perspective, wearing different, you know, shot maker, creator, defensively, has the length to guard multiple positions. He's a guy that fits – again, there's a reason why he was Big 12 Sixth Man of the Year last year under Mark Pope. As good as it gets, doing just a ton of different stuff. I love him. I think he's a star. I think he would be a star at Kentucky. But what I love most about him is that he isn't a guy that needs 20 shots to get his game off. He isn't a guy that needs to play 35 minutes. Again, he was Sixth Man of the Year. Like, he kind of has the same vibe that Antonio Reeves gave off in year one at Kentucky, where he showed the flashes, more so just about kind of putting together the consistency. I think he has an all-American jump in him, but he also doesn't need to have the minutes and the shots to be a star. And I think that also opens the door in Pope's system in general, where he does run a deeper bench. He does play 12 guys. Nobody on his roster the last 2 years have averaged more than 30 minutes a game. He fits there's a window of shots and minutes and touches, and the rotation is just different than a lot of teams we see. There is a role for a second star. I do think that your first priority is to get Jackson Robinson, and then say, what do we have left to lose on a guy like Chaz Lanier? What do we have to lose in his recruitment? And if you miss out on him, then circle back with Wuga Poplar and say, hey, you're going to get shots, you're going to get touches. We can catapult you on a competitive roster looking for the NBA. You want to, you know, kind of have a little trial run for the NBA, see what would look like on this level of platform. Let's see if there's a pairing there. Let's see if there's a match there. I think that there is space for not just one with Jackson Robinson, but two, and you put yourself in a really strong spot if you can get Jackson Robinson to commit quickly and then just push all of your chips in on one last guy on top of just the role, secondary role players to fill out the end of the bench, however many you want, 11, 12, 13, whatever. But you're in a really, really strong spot where if you land Jackson Robinson, you're playing with house money at that point moving forward, because I would be confident with him as your one. But if he's a one or two, 1A, 1B with somebody else, then you can really start getting serious about this team as a top 10 preseason, top 25 team. You can start dreaming big about them potentially making a run in March. And that's what Mark Pope says his goal is. So that's kind of, I think that's how he's going to try to wrap this thing up.
But I think the one thing that we've reached a point here to where at first it was all, man, this isn't moving. Like, you know, Kentucky's not got anything. There's only two or three guys. There's three players on this roster. And then over the course of one weekend and a couple of days, it turns to seven. And then you add backcourt pieces all with just in a few hours of each other. So I feel like we've reached the point that the concern is behind us, that we've relaxed quite a bit over the last 4 to 5 days, because we see what could be a successful roster with the pieces that are in place. And now it's about identifying that missing piece or pieces that kind of then separate you from, are you a Sweet 16 team to are you a Final Four team? And that's the transition and pattern we're in right now. That's easier to navigate when you've got what you've got, because now you see your roster on paper and you can take it and you can approach these guys that are remaining and available and say, here is your clear-cut role that we can slide you in. This is where you stack up in our program. I know what you've done in the past. I know what you've been able to do. This is where you fit with us. And you can sell it so much easier now trying to get that than what you could have 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, it was probably a hard sell for some guys.
Mm-hmm. It was.
Now you can sell it and show it. You've got tape of what you want to do offensively. Those things. I think Kentucky's in a to me, they're in a sweet spot here because you feel good about what you see. I feel really good about the pieces that I see right now. That 2 weeks ago, when we had all these unknowns and uncertainties, we didn't know how to feel. Like, we were all hopeful and re-energized from Pope's introductory press conference at UK, but that's all we knew. Now we know that they can go toe-to-toe. They can get guys and get it done quickly, and they can get guys without them even coming to campus to visit. Like, they've had some big flexes over the last 2 weeks, but now you got a chance to really flex again and kind of get that missing piece or pieces that then take you from a hopeful second weekend team or maybe a confident team that gets second weekend to a team that can get to the final weekend. I don't want to put unworldly expectations on year one, but I like where we're trending here, and I like the way that the staff is being active on social media. I like that they're going to the airport and meeting guys. I love that he's interacting with fans in multiple places and the pictures that I'm seeing and things like that. Like, he's doing all of it right early. He's also doing a lot of this recruiting thing right too, Jack. He's checked off a lot of boxes for me as a guy that is earning a lot of respect, not just as a coach, but on the recruiting trail as well in college basketball. Let's see what he does with this missing piece or two here. I'm confident they end up getting what they want. And when they do, then I think the overall product of what you're seeing, some national media guys, I think then you kind of settle in and kind of identify what Kentucky can be. But this is a team that's going to have – I don't know what the floor and the ceiling is going to be when it's said and done, but I think it's going to be a team with the veteran pieces that it has that it's going to be intriguing to follow, that it wouldn't shock me if they outperform what some people think. I don't think they're going to underperform, though. I think that they're going to have too many older guys that have done it. I think this is going to be a quality basketball team in the SEC with a chance to physically will itself to victory in some tournament games that they haven't been able to do in the last few years.
And I think my favorite part of the social media, you know, handshaking and shoulder rubbing and baby kissing and all the stuff that Mark Pope has to do, my favorite part of that part of this offseason has been the booms with Cody Feger. I was told the players send him what they want the GIF to be. Like, they send it to him saying, hey, this is they handpick their boom GIF and say, this is what I want my introduction to BBN to be. I think that is the coolest thing in the world because it gives you, it's not much. It's just a little nugget, but it also gives you a first look, first glance at what these kids' personalities are. And you get a Kirk, you know, Creasa. He wanted his welcome to BBN to be Danny DeVito walking away from an explosion, wearing a puppy sweater and money falling from the sky. Like, that is, it aligns so much with what his personality is, known as like the villain of college basketball and a walking, living, breathing meme. He literally made a meme, his welcome to BBN GIF. It's hilarious. I think that is so funny to me. And then you get, you know, Brandon Garrison. People were just kind of connecting dots and thinking, okay, well, it's you know, an eastbound and down GIF where you get Danny McBride throwing a double, you know, double gunshot. People thought, oh, shooter, it's Kobe Brea. And then it ends up being Brandon Garrison and he's wearing the cowboy hat. And they think, oh, well, he's just connecting dots that it's a cowboy. But no, it's just because Brandon Garrison likes eastbound and down and Danny McBride, you know, acting it. I think it's hilarious. It's just the little things, you know. It's not that is going to make the difference in whether or not Kentucky wins a national championship or not, but it's a personalization. It's a person, you know, they're making this program welcoming to these kids and saying, hey, again, this is our program. It's not just me as Mark Pope. It's not just Cody Feger and Jason Hart and Alvin Brooks and each individual player. It's all of us together. We're going to make this most welcoming environment imaginable. And it's just one little extra thing.
Well, I think too, a big thing here and for the fan base is there's no longer this huge, like, just gorge or valley below us that's connecting program to fans. It is now we're like all standing here and there's this transparency. There's this, like, you're still moving silently with some things, But there's a connection here that I think that the personalities of the coaching staff is fans are getting to know the assistant coaches. And it's not just another guy over there sitting on the bench that you're wondering, what do they do? Like, it's – they're putting out, you know, gifts and stuff and things on Twitter and on social media, and they're building excitement about commitments. And that is a connection to the fans. That is giving something to the fans to engage with. It's just engagement that for a long time in this program, it was, you know, the media this, the media is bad. But in that shift, maybe the media is bad. Maybe just maybe some in media are bad for your program. That's everywhere. But what happened with that is I think the divide between fans and program also happened. Whether that was meant to happen or it just happened over time, it just got to this point, and then there was just nobody was ever on the same page. So it may be corny to everybody else around college basketball, but to me, I see a connection between coaches, players, staff, fans, program, all of it. And it's been fun to follow for the last couple of weeks. And now when you see one like that, you know Kentucky just landed somebody. It's like Yahtzee in football. That's something that latched on, and it has been there, and it continues to be there. That's cool. It gives something for the fans to connect with to the program, and that's been missing for a long time here. And ultimately, that is your lifeline. That this fan base is the lifeline of this program. It is what makes it special. It's what will make it special 50 years from now when we're no longer on the show doing this and somebody else is in our seats, unless we're really old. If I'm 50 years from now still doing Sources Say, I mean,
something will have gone very, very right for us.
Yes. something will happen. But overall, I just love the breath of fresh air that I'm still breathing with this, and with each passing day, like seeing Pope in the hallway today at school. You should have seen some of the people.
Explain that a little bit. What was the energy in the building seeing that guy walk up? You know, like, what is the clout that he kind of carries himself with? That makes sense.
It's fresh, and I think that the people are excited about it. Like, they're clearly we tried to be, like, now that it's over with, I can probably say it, but like, we tried to be pretty quiet about it because we didn't want him to just get absolutely rushed with people in the building. There were some people that saw him, and we were kind of trying to be quiet about it because obviously they were touring the school and things. Like, he has kids. Like, there's decisions that are being made for their family right now in transitioning to life in Lexington. So, but there were people and there were staff members that saw him that were like, I just want to take a picture with him. I just want to take a picture with Coach Pope. So he has that same wow factor about him that to me, John Calipari had when he would go places like that. Like, people want to take pictures. People care. He's got a face that everybody recognizes now and things. And then I have people that I work with that are like, you know, I was 9-10 years old when Mark Pope won a national championship in Kentucky. I relate more to that guy than I related to anyone else that's been in this seat because I've watched him play. So you're kind of hitting all areas of this, but he to me has this wow factor that has happened quickly, that if he wasn't the head coach of Kentucky and it was Mark Pope just a few months ago, the head coach at BYU, the former Kentucky basketball player, he still would have had it, but it didn't pop as much as it does now. But who's to say this guy doesn't become a legend here? And he's the next national championship head coach to lead Kentucky to a national championship and a one shining moment tag that we remember for the rest of time. Like, I think it's a really cool thing. It's just the overall excitement that at first was like, what the hell are you doing hiring this guy, that even I had for a brief moment because I had locked my eyes in on A, B, and C. That's wore off now, and he's won over the fan base. And I think that I saw that today with my own two eyes with people too. So listen, the longer this thing goes on, the more confident I am that he is going to have success here.
Speaking of who is no longer in the chair and is now in Fayetteville, he got a pretty significant addition today. Adu Thiro takes his talents to Fayetteville to play for Coach Cal in the Razorbacks. That one's a little odd to me. It really is interesting that he was the first guy to enter the portal after the season ended. There was so much talk behind the scenes about how unhappy he was and just didn't think that he got the right opportunities and was kind of, you know, mistreated a little bit, internally, felt like he was held to a different standard because for reasons he didn't understand. That's why he entered the portal and was like, man, I need a fresh start somewhere. And he ends up seriously considering UNC, seriously considering Pitt, going back home playing for the Panthers. Instead, he follows Cal down to Fayetteville. What do you think of that move? How much does that help what Cal is trying to do at Arkansas? And how much does it sting to lose a guy like that?
I mean, I think it makes sense, obviously, but I mean, if you were frustrated with where you were and you go right back to that same staff and things, I mean, I think you're kind of like, well, how frustrated really were you and things, but that's probably the weird part about it. But overall, from a familiarity standpoint, you know, dad played for Cal, you've played 2 years for Cal, it's in the SEC, you're going to be a junior. You still have a ton of upside to your game as being a potential pro, so go with the guy that has done it and got you there. It makes sense for both. And look, I mean, Cal's been able to kind of, like, some guys that he's landed and stuff, you know, the guys from the recruiting class and the players that have transferred and gone on to play at Kentucky, from Kentucky to Arkansas with him, those shouldn't have been hard sells, even though he was moving to Arkansas and it's not Kentucky, because – I still think a lot of those guys picked Kentucky because of Cal and what he had done getting guys to the league. So he's still going to get guys to the NBA in Arkansas and in Fayetteville. That's not going to change. That is still going to be John Calipari. So I think it makes sense. But look, if anybody had been held over, it was going to be really hard on them to transition. Mm-hmm. You wanted to keep Z. You wanted to keep a guy like I do. Like, I get that. But at the same time, those were the guys that I thought were going to have the hardest transition, is if any of them had stayed. Travis Perry never played a single minute for John Calipari. This isn't a hard transition for him. Sure, you've been recruited, but you didn't really get to experience the Kentucky factor of being in the program and wearing the jersey. When he goes up there and puts a jersey on for the first time in UK, he's playing for Mark Pope. He never played for John Calipari. That was going to be a tough transition for any of those guys had they stayed. So that's why I'm actually okay that in the end, none of them did. So I think that Adu put himself in a situation to continue working under people and playing under people that he has familiarity with. The same way I'm talking about familiarity with Mark Pope and the guys that he has on this roster that he knows. That would have been hard, too, for Mark Pope to have to coach guys that had been coached by the previous staff. I always thought that was going to be a tough thing to do. So a clean break for everybody that sets him up here and sets everybody here, I think, is probably the best thing that happened.
The quote that Adu gave was kind of interesting to me. He said, Cal is known for putting guys in the NBA that also stay in the NBA. And Coach Kenny Payne, who is now with him again, was also there for some of those years. After already playing for him and developing after 2 years, I feel that he knows my game and will put me in the right position to succeed and achieve my goals. I think those last couple words were pretty telling to me. Put me in the right position to succeed and achieve my goals. Because the talk behind the scenes was that he didn't feel that Cal was doing that up to this point. And it took a sell job to get him to say, all right, I haven't felt that way. So what is your pitch going to be to me moving forward to trust you to do that with me at a new location? We don't have the Kentucky effect. We don't have the platform. So now it is truly going to come down to just personnel and the nuts and bolts of me elevating my game to get to that next level. It's my understanding when he entered the draft initially, there were some people in his circle that thought that he was a first round pick today, right now. A little delusional, but it also kind of, you know, it's not that far off considering he's already listed as a first round projected first round pick for 2025. So he knows that this is a really crucial year for him, and it is kind of a make or break. Wherever I go, it's going to be my last shot, so I better make the most of it. So there is a lot of trust there in saying, Cal, I don't think that you've done your best job with me up to this point, but you also know me and you know the way I operate and what makes me tick. You coach my dad. We have the familiarity. Let's just finish the job. It hasn't gone as planned the first two seasons. Let's finish the job in Fayetteville. It's a risk on his part. I would have rooted for him at UNC or Pitt, wherever he goes. I'll root for him down at Arkansas, but it is a very strange fit knowing what was being discussed behind the scenes about him not being totally content.
And he would have done, I think he would have done fine here. If he had stayed, I think he would have had success at Kentucky. But I just think that, to me, the bigger risk for a Dew at this stage where you are in a position here that you can put yourself to get drafted a year from now, the bigger risk would have been staying put and playing under a new coach that you don't know. And I think Pope would have loved him. I really do. I think Pope would have loved a Dew Thiero, and that it would have worked, and he would have found ways to be successful. But it's still a big risk, and it would have been a big risk to go somewhere else too when you're thinking NBA upside potential. Even though maybe you didn't feel like you were put in the best situations, you still played for Cal. You still had a role. He's going to need a guy like a Dew at Arkansas right out of the gate. So I think that that's probably the – ultimately, I think it was the right decision for a Dew to go there. And we'll see if it works out for him. Like, hopefully it does.
Speaking of former players now no longer with the program, really interesting draft note that came out this weekend. Rob Dillingham and Reed Sheppard officially received their draft grades from the NBA, and they both officially get top 10 grades. So the NBA, when filing their paperwork to say, hey, I'm officially entering my name in the NBA draft, what do you got for me? And the initial feedback is you are both top 10 talents. That is so wild to me to know that everything we saw with our own two eyes all year of, man, Rob Dillingham is playing like a freaking top five draft pick. Reed Sheppard, I know it sounds crazy, but I think this kid is a one and done, and he's playing like a top 10 pick. He's a lottery pick. Could he go number one? All of those conversations we had throughout the year of, no way, really? But maybe. I mean, it was just hard to kind of put into words back then, but now we have the evidence to back that up, that the NBA views our two coming off the bench talents as top 10 talents, which is really, really, really cool, especially for a guy like Reed Sheppard, who came in not thinking he was going to be at this point walking in those doors.
It confirmed everything that we knew all season long. When it got to a point, we knew that who Kentucky's two dudes were in the backcourt, and they continued to come off the bench. That's old news, but they did enough to put themselves in position to be legit top 10 draft picks. And all those things that you just said that we were talking about Reed Sheppard, where people were like, man, is he really possibly a top five pick? Does that make sense that he's shown up this high on lottery boards and draft projections? Yeah, it does. Like it. And same thing for Rob. So it's still going to be another night for Kentucky basketball where fans are going to support former guys going and chasing their dreams and achieving their dreams. Interested to see what John Calipari's quotes are like.
Does he attend? Is he in the green room?
He has to be, I think. Yeah.
You think?
I think he's, yeah, because he coached those guys. Like, to me, you're in the green room as somebody. If they want you there, that's hopefully. That's wild. That it is. But
what color suit's he gonna wear?
I don't know.
He can't show up in a red suit at Reed Sheppard's table. He can't. He'd have to be neutral.
Yeah. But I still think as the former coach, those two are appreciative of what Cal did in getting them to that point and help getting them there, that it's going to kind of be the last thing Kentucky connected with John Calipari. That's it after that. Like, this is, it'll still be draft night where we'll still be talking about Cal, possibly if he's there, but it'll be the last bridge to the Calipari era for Kentucky basketball. That's it. That's the final piece. So it'll be, that's intriguing to watch at least, but you know, congrats to those guys. I hope that they fall where they want to go. I hope that they land in places where they can go be successful right away, and that it's not a struggle and it's not a grind for those two, because I think that they both have games that are going to transition to the NBA, especially Rob. I think Rob's going to instantly be able to go score for someone a year from now. I think Reed's going to be able to do a lot of things, and some NBA franchise that takes him is going to be very glad that they did. And I think that he's going to go out and do some of those similar things that we saw at Kentucky. So it's going to be another night to celebrate those guys. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, if Cal is there and then maybe what is said about it.
We heard Reed for the first time too at the Derby, which that sucker, I can't believe everything that kid touches turns to gold. He picks a name out of the freaking hat and it's Mystic Dan. He just blabbers about it on the red carpet before the freaking Derby. Somebody says, "Hey, so who's your Derby pick?" And he goes, "I picked Mystic Dan out of the hat, so I guess I'm going to roll with him." Winner. It's like, dude, come on. I couldn't imagine having just the magic that he's been able to accomplish in these last 12 months. Good on him. I'd love that kid to death, but man, if you interact with him, you're going to win the lottery or become a millionaire or whatever. He's just, everything he does is turns to gold at this point. But it was really interesting. He talked to, I believe, Kendrick Haskins of Wave 3 down at the paddock before the race, and shared some insight into his decision and how he got to this point, and kind of acknowledged that even some of the early conversations he had with Mark Pope, it was pretty clear that he knew that he was leaving in his gut, that he just couldn't pass up this opportunity. You know, said that, you know, Jeff kind of jumped out there and said, "We just weren't expecting to be at this point. We never thought that, you know, we hoped this day would come, but none of us in our right mind thought that we would be here 12 months after the fact, after we're arriving on campus, and now we're preparing for the NBA draft." He was like, "It's a really cool thing for us, but it's also just a bizarre feeling thinking that we walked into this thinking it was going to be a 3-4 best case scenario 2-year plan, and we're out in 8 months. It's just not something any of them in that circle even dreamed of." But to hear Reed actually dive into that and say, like, "I kind of have to do what I have to do, but you know, it is what it is." I thought that part was really, really interesting.
Yeah, and that would have been the decision had John Calipari still been the head coach of Kentucky. I fully believe that regardless of who the head coach was or coaching change or not, I think you were going to get the same decision. And look, Jack, I think we all knew it when he started showing up possibly number one, when people started writing about, can he be the top pick in the NBA draft? And then some putting him at number three, number four. Like, that's when you have this whole, like, everybody's doing it. It's not just one person that's saying, "Oh, this is a top five pick or a top 10 pick." Like, it's multiple people that are putting it out there. That's when you know it's like a universal thing. Like, okay, this kid is good enough that he's going to be drafted in this range. And you also have a mental approach here, like a mindset to this, that you come to Kentucky and you didn't think that that's what was going to happen. Then all of a sudden it quickly flips on you. And now you're like thrown into this. You have to kind of sit back and digest that and process it. That's a different process than he didn't think he was going to have make that decision right now. And then you have to make it. That's not easy. Going and I get it. It's millions of dollars. But when it's your future and you're a legacy guy to this program, and you also want to know that you can go and have success in that league, that's a tough decision to make. I mean, it's not easy to – some people's going to roast me for this. Going and making $10+ million or more seems like an easy decision, but when you've got the ties to Kentucky that you could have made a lot of money still here, but you want to not just go to that league, but you want to stick in it, that was probably a decision that he probably fought back and forth with a little bit, Jack, but I think ultimately he made the right one.
I got the exact quote. He said, I'm very excited. It was tough. It was a tough decision for me for sure. Growing up, it was always a dream to play at Kentucky, being able to do that this year and not really knowing what to expect, coming in, wanting to do whatever it took to win and just have fun with it. But at the end of the day, it was also a dream to play in the NBA. This year was unbelievable. It's something I'll never forget. I'm super excited for the next step. Great answer. His dream was to win a national championship at Kentucky. But I think some fans are too kind of, you know, tunnel vision approach with that and thinking, well, that's his only dream. Or, no, every kid that's ever touched a basketball, their ultimate dream at the end of the day is to play in the NBA and prove that they are among the best and the best in the world at their craft. And for Reed Sheppard to be, again, we now have an official classification from the NBA of top 10 pick. That's a once in a lifetime opportunity. That is something that, again, it was my understanding going through the process as he was weighing his options and trying to decide, you know, getting to the bottom of all of this, that there were some concerns about what were to happen if he goes to Portland, if he goes to somewhere way off in the distance, go play for the Detroit Pistons, you know, play for a losing franchise where he doesn't have BBN at his beck and call, you know, the passion and support and, endless love for him kind of pushing him across the finish line. What would that isolation feel like? What would some of the secondary stuff that comes with that, would that impact his decision knowing how much he could make by coming back? And it did become a real decision. Like, it was not as soon as the season ended, it was just a foregone conclusion that he was leaving. He then had the realization after the fact when the dust settled, it would be financially irresponsible for me to not leave right now. And then it was just kind of just a waiting game to decide when he was going to do it rather than if. But it was really tough for him and weighed on him. And obviously when Mark Pope gets hired and it's your dad's college roommate, it was the one guy that probably could have changed his decision for him. But at the end of the day, top 10 is top 10. And we're super, super proud of him. He's going to crush it in the NBA. Where do you think he goes? How high do you think he'll end up going, knowing kind of what the rest of the draft looks like, that there isn't just a clear-cut number one? I think that works in his favor, that, you know, kind of a higher-floor kid, somebody might take a chance on him earlier rather than later, kind of like what we saw with Cason Wallace this past year.
I'm going to say somewhere in that 4 to 7 range is where I could see him going. Well, I don't – where do you – does he get higher than that?
I think a GM isn't going to take him in the top three because he is a risk, because he is, you know, physically, he has his limitations and some of those other things. But I think when there will be a team at 6 that says, I know he is going to be a good professional basketball player. I know he's going to make it in the NBA. He might not be a superstar, but if his trajectory is Derek White with the Celtics, who, you know, as the glue guy for our championship run right now, if that's what his ceiling looks like, that's a really freaking awesome ceiling. And if you were to do a redraft of Derek White's draft, he would be selected in the top 10 where Reed Sheppard is right now. It's a very similar vibe where he might not be a 30 point per game scorer ever, but that dude's going to contribute to winning better than just about anybody in the league. And I'll overdraft you for that reason. I bet I'll go 6.
Who goes higher?
Between Rob and Reed? Mm-hmm. Rob. Because Rob has the star potential. Rob's a guy that could step in and be a 25-point-per-game scorer in the NBA. Yep. I do think that he has that upside. But it'll be it's going to be a wild – I don't think it's going to work out in Cal's favor the way he might in his head right now, having two top 10 draft picks. Especially if they go top 6 together, if it's 3-6 or 5-6 or whatever it is, I think it's going to be more damning than he realizes, that the team wasn't able to win anything of substance with two coming from college. I think they might be number 1 and number 2 among college basketball players, especially at the guard position.
And they didn't start.
And they didn't start, and they didn't win anything of substance. I think that's going to be a tough look on Cal after the fact, that when the reality hits that that's actually where they get selected, I think it's going to not favor him the way that I think I had two top 10 draft picks coming off the bench. Well, that's not a good thing necessarily, Cal. We'll see how that goes. Anything else we want to say before we wrap up? I know we went a little bit long, but...
Yeah, we needed to. It been doing one a week, but there was a lot happened. We needed to touch on all this stuff today.
And we had talked a little bit behind the scenes that we're thinking about going even throughout the offseason, as long as news keeps rolling, that we're going to go still a couple times a week. We're going to try to get at least two set scheduled shows a week. So we're going to start especially that schedule. Yeah.
Especially with the live period stuff coming up pretty soon and things like that. This is going to be intriguing to follow who they watch and things like that. Cause it's a new guy. It's a new staff with Kentucky gear on sitting at these grassroots events and the UIBL and things. So
it's going to make my job a whole heck of a lot easier when I actually know who they're following and who they're watching and knowing who to interview and all that stuff. Cause I'll tell you what, Memphis this last weekend for the UIBL sucked. That freaking sucked, because every kid that you talked to was like, I don't know. I don't even know who Mark Pope is. I haven't spoken a word with him. I don't even know who the new staff is over there. Very frustrated. That part was very frustrating. So I'm excited in Indianapolis next weekend to be able to just sit there and watch them watch these other kids and see, you know, how the recruiting board is going to shake up. It's going to make my job a whole heck of a lot easier, Sean.
Yeah, it definitely is. I'm planning to be there too. So I'll be bouncing back and forth between Hamilton, Ohio, and Indianapolis.
Awesome. Well, I believe I have one quick note before we get out of here. The Sources Say podcast is brought to you by Andy Ludeke, MyPerfectFranchise.net. Andy is a franchise consultant as well as franchise owner and helps people find franchises that fit their skill sets, financial requirements, time to commit, and more. His services are 100% free, and he is here to help. If you have any questions about business ownership, you can learn more and contact Andy anytime at www.MyPerfectFranchise.net. And Sean, before the people get out of here on the chat, I think we're going to, some of these secondary shows, we're going to try to make it more mailbag oriented, fan oriented, answer a lot of questions, whether it's on, you know, chaos board questions and, you know, answering specifically from the chat. So we'll have like a newsy show and we'll have a discussion based show with kind of fan questions and stuff like that. So I think they'll definitely appreciate that as we kind of get into the heat of summer.
Yep. And I think those will be fun for sure, to especially answer questions about the roster as it actually starts to be finalized and things. We can kind of dive into some different stuff, maybe talk about how we see some of these guys working in Mark Pope's system and how we think they fit overall, but still a couple of pieces of the puzzle that still have to go and fall in place.
Yeah, absolutely. Make sure you go subscribe to KSR Plus. We have a special offer, $1 for 2 months. Code is UK1. There is not a better deal in sight. You go there as you get the first look at Intel, discussion with all the KSR guys. Sean's on there, but I'm on there every single day answering questions from fans. That's the place to be right now. So make sure you go capitalize on that very special offer. Make sure you are subscribed to us right here on the KSR YouTube channel. It's been growing at a just ridiculous rate since the start of the offseason and the heat of the rumors and rumblings and all that stuff. So appreciate you guys joining in on the fun with us here on YouTube. Sean, where can fans find your work?
You can follow me on social media at underscore Coach S. Smith.
Got it. Nailed it. You can find me on Twitter as well at Jack Pilgrim KSR. We will be back next time for the Jam Pack Sources Say podcast. We will see you then.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.